Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 169, recorded July 3rd, 2013.
Well, greetings, Aquarimaxers everywhere, and you may have noticed that I have guests today. In fact, I have four of them, and they'll all be taking a turn being my co-host because Kelly is gone today. We're recording a podcast late, as you may have noticed, due to various issues, both technological and medical. So, we're back, and we're trying to catch up. All right. Our listeners for today that have contributed, our contributors, I should say, are Tony in New York, Mark from Long Island, Mick from Carnforth, UK, and Justin, who contacted us on the website, but I'm not sure where he's from. And we also have one from Tom in Provo, who somehow didn't get on this list, so I'll add him as well. Tom in Provo is also contributing this week. So, let's get started by listening to Tony in New York, who left us an audio message.
Hello, Aquarimax. It's Tony from New York calling. I wanted to share with you today my very humble water-changing trick. Although it might be obvious, it wasn't to me at first, so here goes. Very simply, when I'm doing my water change, I fill up my 5-gallon bucket, and then what I do is I get my 1-gallon pitcher alongside it. I fill the 1-gallon pitcher with the 5-gallon bucket, and by using the 1-gallon pitcher to pour water into the tank, it's a lot easier than trying to tip 5 gallons of water into the tank. It seems to disturb the fish less, and if I have a well-placed ornament in the tank, it even stops the force of the water coming in. So again, maybe not much of a trick, but it's a good one to know if you have a tank that's too far away from the python and you don't feel like hauling a 5-gallon bucket of water all across your house or apartment. Anyway, cheers. Just a little tip from Tony from New York.
Thank you, Tony, for sending that tip. And if there's one thing I've learned, it's never assume that a tip is obvious because there's always someone who can learn from it. So I appreciate that. I think that can help out a lot of our listeners. And like you said, even if you do have a python, but you happen to have a tank in a place where you can't really reach with it, it's a great way to help lessen the difficulty of water changes. So thanks again, Tony. We always appreciate it, and we appreciate especially that you sent an audio message because, as you know, we love those. So Isaac is with me for the moment. He's going to be co-hosting.
Hello.
So can you tell us who's next?
Next we have...
I think it's Mark, isn't it?
Mark, yeah.
And where's Mark from?
He's from Long Island.
Yeah. Okay, and do you want to read his message for us?
The sound is much better, and thanks for including me. It was a kick. I want to clarify what I was thinking about with the extra piece of sponge. The sponge can be kept behind the filter for use in another quarantine tank. This way, if I have a sick fish or some fry, I can pull the sponge out and use it to start a new temporary tank with an already cycled filter, an airlift sponge, and an old 5 or 10 gallon tank. After the fish is cured or not, I would throw away that sponge and sanitize a 10-gallon. Do you think this would work?
Ah, and now I understand exactly what he meant, and yes, I think that's a great idea. It's a perfect way to do it, and you shouldn't have any problems doing it that way. That's a good way to keep everything cycled in terms of your quarantine tank. So, yes, thank you for making that more clear. Oh, he does say Guten Tag, too, and that's good because we didn't do our greeting today because Kelly's not here, but he did. Mark did. He sent us a greeting in German, so there you go. And by the way, just for those of you who may not have caught last week's episode, he was talking about using a Maten filter and putting this filter kind of behind it so you don't see it in the main tank, but it's there. Good way to make sure that it is colonized by the bacteria. Okay, so what does he say next?
Here's another link, this time with the corner filter specs and a form that helps you size it all.
Okay, and then he's got the hyperlink there.
It's in German, but Google Translate does a pretty good job on it.
Hmm, good. And Google Translate is always fun, whether or not it does a good job. So we'll put that link on the show page so you can check that out. Some help with sizing your filters and so on. Okay. Thank you, Mark. And we're glad to hear that the audio has been improved. That is a relief. And I'm hoping to go back and fix some of those other episodes when I have a spare moment. Ha! Which I really do hope happens. Go back and fix those. But in any case, thank you for being vigilant and keeping us from blowing everyone's ears out. All right. Now, the next person here doesn't say on this list. I apologize for that, Isaac. But this is Mick in Carnforth, UK. Okay. So, what does he say?
Just been catching up on the last couple of shows. Matten Hamburg filters. I bought a few Hughes tanks a while ago, which had these kind of filters in place, and I have to admit I was rather skeptical about them. I was soon of a new opinion, as they did a great job. Superb at the time, as I was using in-tank heaters, which could be hidden behind, and I used to put a handful of lava rock in there, too. So a terrific amount of surface area. Not recommended for Ancestrus or other lorikeet cats, as sponge filters often become trashed from the grazing action. I use either small powerhead or air-driven box filters for those.
Oh, that makes sense. And thank you for bringing up the always important surface area, which he put in caps, by the way, and quotations, and he used an exclamation point. You can never be too careful with surface area. You got to make sure that that is emphasized. Another thing I would... Glad you pointed out the bit about the lorikeet cats being not very good matches for this sort of filter, and I would add some of the large apple snails, too. I had an experience with that, with the large apple snail basically eating a sponge filter, so... There you go. It's been years, but it does happen. But other than that, it sounds like you've got, there are lots of aquarium inhabitants that match with them very well.
I have also borrowed a large tub from work and set up my axolotls outside for the summer as it was getting too hot in the fish room for them. They have grown on well now, and it looks like 3 males and 2 females, so my hope is, as things cool down toward autumn, they will spawn for me. Fingers crossed.
Oh, cool. I think that would be so fun. I've never spawned any sort of newt or salamander. I've kept them, but never spawned them, so that's going to be fun. And axolotls, they just have a bizarre appeal. It's one of those things. Kind of like African dwarf frogs, too. Something about a completely aquatic amphibian with a comical face. I don't know. But, yeah, hopefully you'll get some baby axies.
My bronze cori fry are growing on quite well now and have developed barbels and some light markings on the bodies. They are feeding well on grindle worms and are very busy little babies.
Well, I'm a bit envious, in the best of ways, of course, for two reasons. One, because coris are cute, and baby coris are doubly cute, and because my coris never arrived. I posted on Facebook about that, and there were some difficulties with that, and it's all resolved. The seller has been very, very good about everything, and I'm not upset at the seller at all, but it just didn't work out. So, anyway, I wanted to... Say, I'm glad your quarries are having babies, and hopefully mine will eventually once I get some more.
I also had a drop of Celebes half beaks recently. A very large fry, about a third of an inch, and a good sized drop of 20 from one mature female.
Yeah. There's an interesting fish for you, those half beaks. They're bizarre. Bizarre live bears. Hopefully we'll get some pictures soon. Would love to see that.
Intro volume and quality great this week.
Yes, thank you. 2 votes for good quality audio.
We'll send some pictures soon. Best fishes, Mick.
Okay, so we are getting pictures. Good. Good, I'll look forward to that. Thank you, Mick. And who's next?
We've got Justin.
Justin, we don't know where Justin's from because he just sent a contact from the contact page, but he didn't mention where he's from, and that's okay. But we don't know, so we can't tell you. There we go.
First off, I'd like to say I love your podcast, both entertaining and very informative.
Oh, good.
I see a lot of products in pet stores that claim to make aquariums safe for fish instantly. Can this be done? The first aquarium I ever set up, I was instructed by a rather large chain store I won't name to add Stresszyme to the water and run the filter for a week before adding fish. At the time, I knew nothing about the nitrogen cycle, and it resulted in frustrating fish loss.
Yes. Yeah, we get a lot of bizarre advice from people, don't we? It sounds like the big chain store that shall remain nameless did that, so I'm glad you've learned more about the nitrogen cycle. That's great.
I've learned some since then, and I'm trying to start up a 4-foot, 55-gallon blackwater tank. I now frequent a locally owned MA and PA live fish store rather than the chain stores.
Oh, that means ma and pa. You didn't know that. That's fine.
In this shop, they stock a product called Fritz Zahn TurboStart. The reason I was intrigued by this product is that it was shipped and stored chilled and has labeled shelf life of 90 days. When I searched the internet for studies and reviews on these products, I got a lot of mixed results, some claiming the wrong bacteria are used in the products, some saying their ammonia nitrite went to zero and stayed there in as little as 2 days. So could it work? P.S. Sorry this is a little long-winded. Feel free to paraphrase. Thanks again.
Okay. Well, this is a hotly debated topic, as you might imagine. Some people swearing by the bottled products and some people swearing at them. And we have... Well, let me tell you my experience. I have used some of them a long time ago. I used some. And I haven't done so for quite a number of years. Not to say that they don't necessarily work, but I have just found that usually I can get something to work better if I just take some media from an existing tank, and so that's what I usually do. But we don't always have that option for various reasons. My feeling, and this is based on not direct experience, I have to admit that, but on what I've done, the reading I've done on it and so on, is that a product that is chilled and has a shelf life is probably a lot more likely to do what it says it's going to do than one that isn't. But I still wouldn't trust it unless it is backed up by tests. So I would probably try it, but what I would actually do, I think, is add the chemicals, or the bacterial preparation, sorry, and then add some ammonium chloride for aquarium use, and cycle the tank that way. So the bacteria is there, but the fish aren't having to suffer through it. And you can see, if you get zero ammonia, zero nitrites, and you get a nitrate reading, you know, and that stays like that for several days, then go ahead, you know. Then if you're getting readings like that for 3-4 days afterwards, then you're probably fine. That's probably what I would suggest. And if you're not, then you know it's not safe to add things. And so you can do a little bit of experimentation that way without risking fish. That would be my bit of advice there. Now, I would make sure... Well, I would probably make sure you get an initial ammonia reading first to make sure you're not there's not something wrong with the kit, or that there's just you haven't added enough ammonia to the tank yet to get a reading. But if you're adding the ammonium chloride that Dr. Tim's Aquatics sells, it's 1 drop per gallon. So if you got a bottle of that, you can get a 4-ounce bottle for like $8 or $9 on Amazon, I think. And you put 55 drops in your tank, wait 24 hours, and then get a reading, and you're reading ammonia, you know, then you know you've got some in there. And I guess you could either add the bacteria before or after. But I kind of doubt the bacteria would be able to handle it all at once. So if you added the bacteria before and then added the ammonia the next day or, you know, sometime thereafter, you probably still get ammonia reading. But if you watch the ammonia go down and then you do a reading on nitrite and you don't have any of that and your nitrate is up higher than it was before you added anything, you know, get a baseline before you add bacteria or ammonia, then you have a pretty good... you have pretty good evidence that it's working. Now, I say get a baseline before that because you will have sometimes bacteria, or not bacteria, you'll have your water supply has nitrates already in it. And so, like, my water at work tests in the kit at about 5 parts per million straight out of the tap, which isn't a whole lot. But if you're expecting 0 and you get 5 parts per million on the kit and you say, oh, I'm getting nitrates, my tank might be cycled by now, and it, of course, it's not. You have to wait until it goes up appreciably from there. So get a baseline before you add anything and try that. And it could save you a couple of weeks, possibly, if it's a good product. Okay. So hopefully that covers about what you were asking about. I think so. Hopefully that helps. And thank you, Justin, and let us know what you decide to do. Okay, who's next?
Tom in Provo.
Tom in Provo. Okay, cool.
Russ and Kelly, my tank moves inexorably towards being all live plants and no plastic. This week I added some Anacaris, but must say it looks awful. I hope that as it starts getting new growth and I do some replanting, it will look better. Unfortunately, the frog bit I introduced a few weeks ago has all but disappeared. might have provided fresh necks for my mollies. I finally ordered a new light, Marine Land Aquatic Plant LED light with timer, which I hope will allow me to grow some new plants with higher light requirements. And I added a couple of nerites to the tank. The subspecies was not specified at the store, but images I found on the internet suggest they are track nerites, ruby nerites, or tiger nerites, which it appears are all names for the same thing. Whatever. But are nerites burrowers? I didn't think they were, but these guys appear and disappear. Yesterday, I searched the tank for half an hour and could not find either. This morning, one was front and center. Tonight, they're not showing. I do have an assassin snail in the tank, but it seems unlikely that it could have done a nerite and disposed of the corpse, shell and all, in such a short time. The fish, but not so much the snails, are with me.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the first part first. He says his tank's moving toward being all live plants, no plastic. Yay!
Yay.
You know, I have had similar issues with anacharis sometimes. Sometimes it does just look awful. It sort of melts. I've also had times when it grows amazingly well, fantastically, and it's sort of hard to predict when, in my experience. But I have stopped growing it just because it does sometimes do that, where it sort of falls apart. It's easy to be ripped apart if you have active fish in the tank. It can rip it apart. So I haven't grown it for a while, even though it grows like an inch a day when it's doing well, and it'll flower sometimes. I've had it flower in the tanks and had it grow like crazy, but that's usually when they have a lot of light on the tank and it's not that warm. That's been my experience. Warmer water doesn't seem to do as well for me, at least. But you never know. Sometimes it'll... I've seen it thriving in a tank with one gold... 10-gallon tank with one goldfish with only some diffuse window light, too. So, go figure. Now, the frog bit is an interesting thing, saying it all has all but disappeared. I don't know. Mollies do like a lot of vegetation. I haven't had any experience with both of them together. I've had both species, but I have never had mollies and frog bit together. So if any of you can shed some light on that, whether mollies eat it or not, it would be interesting to know. I've noticed that, I read somewhere that it doesn't do as well with Flourish Excel, maybe it was? Some certain plants don't do that well with Flourish Excel. Frog bit is one of those plants that doesn't need Flourish Excel because it's at the water surface, and so it's getting all the atmospheric carbon it can stand. You know, all that it wants. Carbon's not a limiting factor. So it might make sense that it would thrive better even if it doesn't have that, if there's something in the Flourish Excel that is bad for it. I don't know. So I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it. And also your water flow. Frog bit does like a little bit, but not too much. If it gets pushed around a lot, it tends not to do as well, in my experience. So maybe look into that too. It does need really bright light, in my experience, too. I don't know exactly what lighting you had before you got the Marine Land Aquatic Plant LED light with timer, but that may very well make a difference. This is something interesting with my frog bit, too. My frog bit's doing okay, but when I first put it in the tank, it just exploded, and now it's not doing quite as well. It's not doing as badly as it was when the amphipods were running rampant. It's recovered quite a bit from there, and I have new growth all the time, and it's doing fairly well. But it's not growing quite as crazily as it was in the beginning. And I don't know if that's because I'm dosing more often with the Flourish Excel or not. But anyway, interesting thing to think about. I'm excited to hear how the Marine Land Aquatic Plant light, the LED one, does for you. I've been eyeing those, been wanting to try one out for quite some time. I went to the Living Planet Aquarium that's here nearby, and they are using a lot of those on a lot of their exhibits, and it made me want to try it out. I love the fact that you can time both the lunar lights and the bright lights independently, which you can't do on their older double bright fixture that I have. Okay, and now for the nerites. I don't know about burrowing with nerites. I have a zebra nerite, a tiger nerite, and a number of olive nerites. I haven't necessarily seen them burrow, but I have seen them disappear. I put one in a tank at work, and I didn't see it for days, but then I started seeing little bites, because it was the aquaponics tank experiment I was doing, and I was getting some algae on the glass, and I started seeing little chunks out of the algae, and then now the tank is, there's basically no algae anywhere on the glass, But it took me about a week or so before I ever saw the nerite, and even now I don't see it very often. There are a lot of places to hide with all the root structures in there, but it's amazing how secretive they can be. And it seems to me that the tiger and zebra nerites are a little bit more secretive than the olive nerites, but I could be wrong about that too. That's just something that I noticed. I've never kept assassin snails and nerites together just out of safety, but I've heard from other people that they do that without a problem, so it might be fine. But something to keep in mind. If you do find that any of your nerites have been attacked by the assassin snail, let us know, because then we'd have some definitive information. But hopefully that doesn't happen, because that would be sad. And certainly, as you mentioned, it would be very unlikely that it would dispose of the shell, because they don't typically touch the shells. So I think that is about it that we have for this week. There were some other things I wanted to cover, I think, but I can't think of anything. I do. I remember something. We have some announcements. We have 3 interviews in the works. One of them, the most forthcoming, the one that's going to be within a week or so, is Diana Wallstedt. She's back. She's going to talk to us, as we discussed on our last interview we had with her. She is the author of The Ecology of the Planted Aquarium, which, by the way, is now out in a third edition, a digital edition. The third edition is now available digitally, so you can go check that out. We'll put the link on the show page to that. She is going to talk to us about mycobacteriosis, also known as piscine tuberculosis, or fish TB. It has various names, some more accurate than others, but she's going to talk about that. She's recently produced an article on that. She's done them in the past. She's done a more recent updated article, the exact nature of which we shall discover more when we talk to her later this week. So be looking forward to that. And we've also got a couple others in the works that I won't reveal too much about yet. But hopefully you'll enjoy that. And hopefully you enjoy your week. And until next time, may the fish
be with you.
And thank you once again, Isaac, for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.